friends. Welcome to Sam Nation. Sam Rogowski, your host, America's favorite toxically masculine metrosexual, reporting for duty. Phone number here, 800-222-5222. If you'd like to be on the program, sam@samnation.com is the email. Lots and lots going on, things swirling in the air. Al Franken rumored to be perhaps on the out tomorrow. There's a press conference. And some mixed signals about what it's going to be. So we'll cover that. There's a Supreme Court case. We absolutely are going to get into this because, as usual, the way it is characterized, it's being characterized in the mainstream media, is absolutely patently false. This is the gay cake. Well, the cake itself wasn't gay, but there was a gay couple who went to get a wedding cake and were turned down. And if you've been anywhere talking to people, this is an issue that so many people have been scratching their head. How can the state of Colorado make this guy bake a wedding cake for a gay couple? And it's actually more complicated than that. And there's some interesting precedent that I think will decide. I will tell you how I think this case is going to play out. And then, with all the fires going on. And of course, the scenes are horrible. Fireproof homes, is there such a thing? Just thinking about this. But anyway, before we get to all of that and more, I want to mention here about this Jerusalem embassy brouhaha. Today, President Trump, in a press conference at the White House, declared that the U.S. embassy would be moving from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And subsequently, all hell broke loose. And there are three kind of critical points here that you need to know about this issue. Because for the most part, the commentary about this is absolutely sideways. You've probably heard the first kind of general thing here is that this decision was made to move the embassy to Jerusalem 22 years ago, and not by a president, but by Congress. And I'm going to add not just a huge bipartisan majority of the House, but then about 6 months ago, this entire act was reaffirmed by a unanimous Senate vote. A unanimous Senate vote. So if you today hear a bunch of Senate and House Democrats poo-pooing this thing and calling Trump an idiot and a loser, I just want you to know that Nancy Pelosi being one of them, she went on the record. She voted for this back in 95. A unanimous Senate vote, not forget 95, 6 months ago. So that is one part of this issue that's critical. The authorization for this goes back that far. Now, the reason it didn't get done is because American presidents are political animals. This includes Trump. I mean, everybody's a political animal. And for the most part, when it comes to Middle East peace, American presidents are pousses. They're meow-meows. Okay, these are they absolutely lose their nerve and they let the establishment, you know, Ivy League, Ivy Tower, the State Department honchos, the deep state, scare them away from making any bold moves. And that is the biggest argument that we're hearing today, right? The argument is it doesn't matter that there was this resolution to do this. It doesn't matter that, I guess Jerusalem is Israel's capital after all. But why rock the boat? This is classic Trump. He's just rocking the boat for the sake of rocking the boat. Yes, exactly. He is a bull in a china shop. So my point here, and as I've listened to this all day and people talking about this and blah, 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 I'm looking and I go, well, maybe administration after administration after administration going through and trying to achieve the great elusive unicorn in the wild Middle East peace. Just maybe It's time for somebody to do something that is not conventional. And the final critical piece of this that you have to know is this is part of a setup for future negotiations. And you know why? It's actually quite interesting. When we talk about building an embassy, and I know a lot of my friends on the right, especially my libertarian friends, are telling me, texting me, we don't have money for this. This is money we're going to be borrowing from China. You know, the Chinois are going to be sending us some Bitcoin so we can pay for this thing. Trump should just say, okay, all right, Jerusalem's the capital, don't move the embassy, even though an embassy in Jerusalem in the capital is very symbolic. Okay. But the interesting thing in all this is that there is already a building that is in Jerusalem that was built back in 2010. That was intended. It was built. It's much more than an average consulate. Okay. Israel is a relatively tiny country. I get that it's not unimportant, but it's a relatively small country. This consulate, if you've seen it, it's fancy and it's huge. And the square footage, I believe, and somebody may correct me on this, but the square footage rivals the actual embassy complex in Tel Aviv. Point being, there is a physical building that could have today been the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. All Trump would have had to have done is say, all right, government contractor X, put a sign up. Well, that's a little more complicated than that. I know. But we're not talking about having to build a structure from scratch. We're not talking about having to identify a piece of land and purchase it and go and hire. We're not talking about that kind of a process occurring. I am sure that there will be some redevelopment of this facility that we'll have to. But if the intention was to do what the political pundits are accusing Trump of doing, he would have done that. What this is about is Trump going in and saying, you know what? You Palestinian Authority people that are constantly whining and sinking any efforts of achieving peace, even though it's what you claim you want. Here's what I'm going to do. There's a new sheriff in town. Right now, I'm going on the record. We're declaring that we're recognizing Jerusalem as the capital and we're moving our embassy there. And by the way, quietly, this is again, nobody's talking about, I signed another waiver under Section 7 of that law passed in 1995, another 6-month waiver pushing back the move of the embassy. Interesting stuff. And I don't think, well, my job is to connect the dots. And as I do that, I don't see this as being some kind of an issue. So those are the three points here. We got the Embassy Act. This is not Trump's decision, right? This is something that Congress authorized. And then, by the way, the Senate reauthorized this very recently in the last year, unanimously, right? Bunch of Democrats, what everybody wants, bipartisanship, people getting along, being in the middle, singing Kumbaya, locking arms. So this is not a controversial thing. It's only controversial as soon as Trump does it. And then, of course, you know, all hell breaks loose. And the second thing is the consulate that is built in Jerusalem was intended to be built as an embassy. And finally, so the building's already there. And so finally, the third point is if he'd wanted to move the embassy, he could have just done it. He would have just done it. It would have been there today, you know, within weeks. This is all part of a strategic setup, and I think, again, I think it's the wise move. The whole reason the Iran deal, you know, sucks, and why we're in this terrible situation where we've got basically an unenforceable agreement, is we went into it, we negotiated, the entire process began with us apologizing and sending money. You know, I'm a lawyer. I negotiate with people. That does not work. My client, I want to get my client $1 million. You know what we're going to do? Let me just first of all, on behalf of my client, I am so sorry. I know you wrecked his life and he's a paraplegic now, but you know what? I'm so sorry. Are you kidding me? If I did that in front of my client, he'd fire me on the spot. But that is what the Obama administration did on a routine basis in dealing with this problem. Now, if you think that Trump was the first person to rhetorically promise an embassy in Jerusalem, you're gravely mistaken. Going back here's just a quick soundbite of three presidents. This is Bill Clinton. This is George W. Bush and Obama, all making the same promise during their respective campaigns. Listen in.
Jerusalem is still the capital of Israel and must remain an undivided city accessible to all.
As soon as I take office, I will begin the process of moving the United States ambassador to the city of Israel as chosen as its capital.
I continue to say that Jerusalem will be the capital of Israel, and I have said that before, and I will say it again.
And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided.
Well, there it is. Back in 92, Bill Clinton, 2000, George W. Bush, and 2008, Barack Hussein Obama. All right. So now Trump comes along, says the same thing, and every liberal gets their panties in a twist. Everybody's having a cow. And I sound like a broken record. I am sorry for this. But it's because these people, these critics are just deranged. This is not a legitimate criticism. I'll give you an example. You have a group called the Arab American Institute. And they have a president. His name is Jim Zogby. And Jim, he's got a slightly more famous brother, John, I believe his name, who's the big pollster, who, by the way, is the moron who got everything wrong in the last big presidential election. So the brothers Grimm, the Zogby brothers, this guy is he's an anti-Trumpist, he's a liberal, he's a left-wing guy, he's not a Muslim, I think he was raised as a Catholic in, is he from Syria or Lebanon? But at any rate, this guy is a big spokesperson for all things related to Palestine and the Palestinian peace process. And here is what he says. Here's his criticism of the president. And I want you to really listen to this closely.
Since Israel built the wall and closed off Jerusalem, you have literally severed the heart of Palestine from its people. It basically means that the U.S. is doing what no other nation on earth has done, which is recognizing Israel's hold on Jerusalem, which the international community hasn't done. And it hasn't done it because in 1948, Jerusalem was supposed to be an international city, and Israel broke that. So I don't know what Trump is recognizing right now. What I know is that he's playing with fire. It's a dangerous and irresponsible game, and there will be consequences, very serious consequences, and I don't know if he cares.
The voice you're hearing, I neglected to mention, the voice you're hearing in the background is Chris Matthews. Chris Tingles Matthews. This is stunningly stupid. Even by the standards of what are these PLO apologists that the left loves to flirt with on a regular basis. Let me tell you a little bit about history. It's inconvenient at times, but history matters. In 1948, the city of Jerusalem was divided. That is correct. And Jordan took stewardship over most of Jerusalem, walled off portions of the city, persecuted Jews, persecuted Christians, destroyed synagogues, turned them into chicken coops. And all of this indignity Israel suffered through and ignored. It wasn't the terms of the army. There was a conflict. There was an armistice. They drew up a map of how it was going to be. There were terms. And of course, Jordan didn't honor any of the terms. This is how you negotiate in the Middle East. Okay? If you've been to the Middle East, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's not a slur, but this is how it works. You make a deal, and whatever. So then what happens? So Zogby's an idiot. He's a dumb A-money-money. Because you know what happens in 1967? It's called the Six-Day War. And Jordan was the aggressor. Jordan attacked Israel. And Israel won it because they're really great. Go in there, you know, win the war. And scoop up Jerusalem. And by the way, as soon as Israel had Jerusalem, opened up Jerusalem to all three major faiths, provided stability, provided security in a much more hospitable environment. Liberals always, always, especially when it comes to Palestine, have no facts. It's nothing about history, nothing about reality. And it pisses me off. Don't go anywhere. More on this when I come back. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, back behind the Sam Nation microphone here in the Sweet James Studios. We're located, as you know, in an undisclosed location on the right side of the orange curtain. Okay. The embassy gate, Trump's announcement today that he would send an instruction. He signed a big to-do on a big piece of paper. Did you see his signature, by the way, when he was signing it? His signature is enormous. If you signed a signature like that on a check, you wouldn't be able to read anything else on the check. He's got a I don't know if you've noticed, it's a big signature. He's very into himself, but I think you guys know that. At any rate, signed it, it's an order, and now the process to begin exploring moving the embassy to Jerusalem. And I was explaining last segment, in case you missed it, that an interesting note of observation here is that there already is a building in Jerusalem that is part of the Jerusalem consular complex that it was built perhaps repurposed for, it could be repurposed as an embassy very easily. The move could have been done fairly instantly. I mean, as instantly as the federal government is able to change signs on a building and move personnel around, et cetera, et cetera. So I read that as this is posturing ahead of a negotiation for Middle East peace, which is a process very important to Trump. Now, let's listen to what Trump said about this process and what he said today at the White House. It's kind of interesting. I want to take this apart. So listen to this.
Presidents issued these waivers under the belief that delaying the recognition of Jerusalem would advance the cause of peace. Some say they lacked courage, but they made their best judgments based on facts as they understood them at the time. Nevertheless, the record is in. After more than two decades of waivers, we are no closer to a lasting peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. It would be folly to assume that repeating the exact same formula would now produce a different or better result.
Sorry, and I needed to set this up to understand that the waiver he's talking about is in Section 7 of the Act, the Jerusalem Embassy Act of 1995 that was passed by Congress, designating that the embassy was to be relocated from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. There's a built-in waiver that gave the executive branch the ability to postpone it indefinitely on a biannual basis. So that's what he's talking about. He's basically saying all my predecessors kept pushing this, you know, the ball down the road, 6 months, 6 months, 6 months, 6 months, hoping and praying that it would, well, they're not going to piss off the Palestinians and we want them on our side, because what's more important, an embassy in Jerusalem or lasting Middle East peace? Well, the answer I would think is fairly obvious, but his point is valid. It's true. It didn't work. And it didn't work for 22 years. So why in the name of Sam Nation would you think it would work now? Now, there is a pivot here in the press conference. And I'll get into this a little bit in the next segment, because I went one very interesting thing I noticed. I watched the press conference live today, courtesy of my daughter. She gave me that terrible stomach flu. So I was home today on my deathbed, and I watched an enormous amount of cable news. So I was watching all of this happen live, and Pence, Mike Pence, the vice president, yeah, he was standing behind Trump, to Trump's right, just behind Trump's right shoulder. And I don't know if any of you saw this, but he looks like the cat that swallowed the canary. You know, there's this thing that came out recently where supposedly Pence had been planning to take over the campaign when the Access Hollywood tape came out. Pence was starting to float the idea of him taking over for Trump, that Trump would quit the race and Pence would step in. And there's also a news report that Pence's wife hates Trump. So I was looking at their body language. This is the first time I'd seen them together. And you know what? Pence didn't look good. Like, Pence was there. But the most important thing, did you notice what they were wearing? They were both wearing white shirts with blue ties, the colors of the Israel flag. I don't know. Is it just a coincidence? Perhaps. But I know that imagery is powerful. I know Trump is a detail guy and cares about these things. So maybe he was sending a signal. Anyway, more on these clips. And I'm going to play you Obama's own words, which is the best part of this whole thing. The best. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC. We got John Wolf up next with the news.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, bottom of the hour here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I'm going to, at 8 o'clock, I want to talk about this gay wedding cake case out of Colorado. It's actually, I think the case, the issues of the case are completely mischaracterized by the mainstream media. And I promise you, I will make it really understandable. I will not just sink deep into legalese. I will use English. I promise. So don't worry, I will get to it. I will get to that 8 o'clock hour. Stay tuned. Now, I played just right before the break a clip of President Trump talking about the waivers, how many times the waivers to the act that was passed by Congress back in 1995 and reaffirmed by the Senate 6 months ago, by the way, in a fully unanimous vote. So that Senate that we're told can never get along on anything, a unanimous vote. President after president after president have kicked the can down the road 6 months at a time, using provisions in Article 7 of the Act that give the president that ability to keep, on a temporary basis, the embassy in Tel Aviv. All right. So there was a pivot in the press conference. And by the way, up until, this is interesting, as you're trying to read tea leaves, who's on what side, who agrees with Trump and who doesn't. So my read is that Pence was absolutely not happy about this deal, because he looked sheepish. He had this funny looking smirk on his face the whole time Trump was talking, and then body language, he began nodding his head up and down. He started nodding his head. I mean, he almost looked like a bobblehead at one point. As soon as Trump began to say this, it was a critical pivot in the talk, because it goes back to what the expectations are for the peace process and negotiations that surround it. Listen in.
I also want to make one point very clear. This decision is not intended in any way to reflect a departure from our strong commitment to facilitate a lasting peace agreement. We want an agreement that is a great deal for the Israelis and a great deal for the Palestinians. We are not taking a position of any final status issues, including the specific boundaries of the Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem, or the resolution of contested borders.
Let me explain this. The Palestinian, Jordan, who was the earlier, I would say, Muslim country in possession of Jerusalem, lost it in a war, in the Six-Day War in 1967. And the PLO have been banging their pots and pans and blowing people up, since even before that time, trying to assert their control over Jerusalem as well. So when he says we're open to discussing, and it's not a final statement on the specific boundaries of the Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem, they're talking about how they're dividing the city up. I mean, right now, the embassy complex that will probably become the embassy, and it's that consulate, is in the west part of Jerusalem. And so there may conceivably be in a situation where the east part of Jerusalem, as part of the peace process, is given to the Palestinians, possibly. But my point again was about negotiating. Isn't it better just go right through and say, hey, starting right now, it's all Israel's. Yeah, we recognize it as Israel's capital. We're not making any final determinations on anything, but we're just going to do this. Listen to what Obama said about this very same thing back in 2008.
I continue to say that Jerusalem will be the capital of Israel, and I have said that before, and I will say it again. And I also have said that it is important that we don't simply slice the city in half. But I've also said that that's a final status issue. That's an issue that has to be dealt with the parties involved, the Palestinians and the Israelis. And it's not the job of the United States to dictate the form in which that will take, but rather to support the efforts that are being made right now to resolve these very difficult issues.
For all the grief that Trump is getting, he sounds almost exactly like Obama. That's my point. All right, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. Talk Radio 790. KABC.
Sam Rojofsky here for my friend, my attorney, Sweet James Bergner. This is the guy to call if you get into a car accident. I know these fires going on. I don't know if you've seen this. There's looky-loo traffic on the roads. This is bad enough that people's homes are burning, but there's, people just rubbernecking it, looking out, at what's going on with the firefighters, and they're stopping and they're getting rear-ended. So accidents are out there on the road. Hopefully nothing happens to you, but if it does, the most important thing, the best thing you can have is a number in your hip pocket. Make that number James. Have him and his people help you get through an accident in the event one happens. 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right, let's do this. Speaking of the wildfires, I'm a detail guy. I like building things, and I'm always fascinated by systems and protocols and things that can be done to mitigate risk. So what does that all mean? Well, it means I'm sitting here, I'm scratching my head, I'm going, well, so Bel Air, not a lot of poor people live there. Okay. You see some of these houses from the air? I thought I had a nice house. I live in a shack. Okay. I'm just a rube from Orange County. Okay. I live in a shack compared to the houses that I saw today from various news choppers, but more power to them. I'm great. It's not a complaint. I'm just saying, with all that money going into constructing these palaces, what's been done to make them fireproof? And can a residence be made fireproof? And the answer actually lies in all those incessant hand-wringing shots today that were taken by various news people. Say, I just really hope it doesn't get to the Getty. The Getty Center, the big museum that's just off the 405 there, across the street from Bel Air. And the answer is, everybody was hand-wringing over the Getty. And then, of course, they got to put in their politically correct cut. Oh, but we're not, we're much more concerned about people's homes. No, you're not. Because if some, you know, somebody's home burns to the ground, as sad as it is, as long as the person's okay, frankly, you know, a building across the street that houses priceless, irreplaceable masterpieces is more important. I'm just going to go say it. So, but that's not the point of it. The point of it is that it, the premise of the hand-wringing is nuts, because the Getty has actually been designed to be fireproof. Did you know this? They don't have a vault. Most museums, okay, so if you know, if the riots break out, Armageddon is here, Kim Jong-un fires a little, you know, bottle rocket over here, what they do is they take their they take the paintings that are hung up on the walls and put it somewhere in a vault. Florida, very, very good example of this is Florida. You have hurricanes. Hurricanes are not good for artwork, generally speaking. And so what happens is they put these, they put the paintings away when there's a storm coming. The Getty does not have a vault because the Getty was designed from the very beginning to be fireproof. So I thought about it and I asked a few people because, you know, I remember somebody one time telling me, this was like a long time ago, it's like 1912, they told me that the Titanic was sinking proof. So I remember that. That's a joke. Why are you not, you're not laughing? Nothing? I got nothing for that? Got a tough crowd here, folks. Tough crowd. So, can it be done? And the answer is mostly yes. So what the Getty did, it's all concrete, travertine stone, and metal, which are happen to be three materials that don't burn so easy. And then, more than that, they've planted a bunch of plants that are very heavy in water. So one of the types of plants you can plant, I think is horribly ugly, are those ice plants. You know, those, they have them on the sides of the freeways. You know what I'm talking about. But there's a lot of water in the plant, and that helps it from ever igniting. So as long as you're clearing dry brush and dry leaves and all that, it'll help protect you from fire. Now, what does this all cost? An arm and a leg. That's the reality. So most of the time when people are, even wealthy people, when they're building a nice house, you know, what do we have? Do we, you know, build it out of poured in place concrete with rebarb and, you know, and spend, you know, untold money per square foot? Or do we, you know, do we build it out of wood, cover it with a few pieces of stone, make it look extra fancy, put in the dream cappuccino maker, and call it good? Well, we're Californians. We care about how things look. And so that's where we are. Okay. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News, talk, evolve, 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC. One final point here. This is an example of what I was talking about earlier. When it comes to the embassy move to Jerusalem, the declaration, the signed order made by President Trump today, declaring the move to, I think, again, it's a strategic move designed to give America and give Israel a bargaining chip that at the end of the day isn't earth-shatteringly important. Here's Fareed Zakaria talking about what kind of credibility you need in a, this is big CNN commentator. He's a Middle Eastern guy. This is his thing, right? The Middle East peace process is his milieu. He's been covering this forever. And he's very wrong here because this, here's, listen to him, how he sets up this problem.
Israel doesn't need, you know, the United States as an ally anymore in the sense that they are the most powerful force on the ground by far. Israel is sort of a regional superpower. What they need is for the United States to have credibility with the Palestinians so that there can be a meaningful negotiation. If the United States is seen as blatantly one-sided, it doesn't help. And by the way, this is an issue on which the United States would be siding not with Israel, but with the current Israeli government.
Yeah, libs not only hate Israel. This is the truth. I mean, no, absolutely. At the end of the day, liberals hate Israel, but they especially hate Netanyahu. And Netanyahu's DNA goes back to the, you know, with, I mean, his brother was a big war hero, and he's a Zionist. I mean, they absolutely loathe Netanyahu. So this is, it's not even about Israel. It's about the evil guy that runs the place now. But here is the most important part of what Fareed Zakaria said, because I actually agree with, but not in the way that he intends. The United States must have credibility with the Palestinians so that there can be meaningful negotiation. Agreed. And that credibility does not come from kissing their A-money monies. The credibility comes from saying, hey, you know what? Here's middle finger number one. Here's middle finger number two. Check these two bad boys out. By the way, we're doing what no other president has done. We mean business. We're doing this. And if you guys want to get real with us, yeah. If not, meh. And that is how you negotiate. You don't go in saying, oh, This is, you know, I mean, the State Department is filled with such emasculated weenies. It's just unbelievable. And they're all there. You know, they've all went to the top schools, you know, Harvard and Yale, and they all are so smart. They can't get out of their own way. And the mistake that every past U.S. president who failed at reaching a Middle East peace is what? They listened to these bozos. They deferred to them. Well, Trump needs to just continue shooting from the gut. This is the right thing to do. I think it's a very good move. All right. Next hour, I'm going to get into the gay cake case. Well, the cake. Okay, I've clarified. This is a couple in Colorado who's getting married. A man and a man. This means they're gay. They went to a Christian baker. The Christian baker said, I don't want to do this. I don't want to put a, you know, I don't want to do this. I don't want to write a pro-gay message on the cake. It's contrary to my beliefs. And instead of finding a different place to get a cake, these two D-bags decided to go out and basically burn his business to the ground using the Human Rights Commission, a state Human Rights Commission in Colorado. This case, if it doesn't enrage you, it ought to. And it's not a gay rights case. I'll talk about this. Also, Al Franken, interesting developments there. The race in Alabama. Holy smokeballs. That's all coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC, 8 o'clock in the Southland. And I know that living in California is frustrating, especially when it comes time to pay taxes. Oh, that's really the day of the year that I hate this place. And it's always that day of the year that I think to myself, I go, I'm moving to Florida or Nevada or someplace. Anyway, so when I see news stories about Florida, I always that's the background. I always play it against this threat that I am going to someday move there. You see this snake that they captured? It's like a 19-foot python that they captured in the Everglades. So when I see stories like that, I think to myself, no, thank you. I think even if the Senate bill here and the House reconciliation bill comes up with no SALT deductions and we don't get to deduct our crazy, crazy California income taxes, I still think it's better to live in a world where you don't have, you know, 19-foot snakes out in the wild. Call me crazy. Okay. This gay wedding case. Gay wedding cake case. Okay. The actual case before the Supreme Court is Masterpiece Cake Shop versus the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. And this case has been around for a while because the issues at the heart of the case go back several years. And it's been a touch point for conservatives and liberals alike because, the conservatives were like, oh, how can this be? We got a conservative Christian guy who the government is saying must bake a cake for some gay guys getting married. And the left is saying, well, this is a gay rights thing. I mean, you can't have discrimination. Discrimination is bad. So what matters always in these cases are facts. Whenever you look at a Supreme Court decision, and this is when you go to law school, you what they do is they make you read a ton of cases. There's no textbook that says the law is this. In American law schools, they make you read cases. You get these big books. Each one costs like $1 million. It's such a scam. You get this big book and you sit there and you read these Supreme Court cases. Well, you, state cases too. But in constitutional law, what matters are Supreme Court cases. And thank goodness that's the reason con law is an interesting subject is because for the most part, Supreme Court justices write the cases in a really nice way, in a really understandable way. And they're very well done, generally speaking. But the first things that a case addresses is not the decision or the opinion or anything. It's the facts, which is exactly the opposite of the way the media handles any particular issue, right? I'm going to start with my opinion and then facts. What facts? So what matters here are the facts, because it will go to the heart, in my view, it'll go to the heart of the issue of the case. So what happened here is there's a guy named Jack Phillips. Now, he's a baker. He bakes cakes and cookies and other indulgent goods that are not good for you. There, I don't know if he does any vegan treats. It's unclear to me. But at any rate, he makes sugary stuff that apparently, depending on the situation, can also be decorated by him. And one of the things that he does are wedding cakes. Now, he is not the only baker in Colorado. I'll throw that out there, too. He's not the only baker in Colorado. But at any rate, two guys go to his shop. They're two guys are getting married. There's them, Mullins and Craig. And they go in and they say, well, we want you to not only we want to bake a cake, but, you know, we want to put some decorations on it that, you know, signify that we're getting married as two men. And Philip says to them, well, I'll bake you a cake. I just am not going to design your, you know, gayness onto the cake. I'm trying to put this in really simple terms. So if you're offended by this, live with it. This is not how they teach law school, by the way. I mean, this is plain English. It's a translation. So the issue is not, no cake for the gay men. The issue is cake for the gay men, but I don't want to put a gay message on the cake because I'm a devout Christian and I'm not into, you know, into that thing. All right. And incidentally, this guy is kind of a, he's kind of principled about other stuff. He doesn't. He didn't do any Halloween cookies or Halloween cakes. He was anti-Halloween. And so he would refuse to do those. He also refused on a number of occasions to do divorce cakes. I didn't even know. Is that a thing? People get a cake to celebrate a divorce? Have you done that? I don't know. So apparently he wouldn't do that because he doesn't like divorce. So you're starting to get the picture. The guy's got principles. They're very conservative, religious, Christian principles, and he's, you know, and he's hard and fast on them. So then what happened is these two guys, instead of, listen, if it was me, if I was getting married to producer Robbie over here, and, but this is not workplace sexual harassment, by the way, Robbie, this is strictly a hypothetical. There are no, I'm not asking, this is nothing, just bear with me here. If I was marrying producer Robbie and we went into a shop somewhere and they said to us, no cake, I didn't want to design that because it goes against my beliefs. I would just find another cake shop is what I would do. I'd say, well, screw it. You're not going to get my business. I might, you know, maybe write a bad Yelp review or whatever. But anyway, these guys went on a mission. They went on a 5-year, you know, destruction mission to put this dude out of business, and they all but succeeded. I mean, his business shrunk by half. He lost, he had to fire a bunch of employees. This has been an enormously financially challenging thing for the small business owner. And the way that they did it, the way that these two aggrieved individuals did this is by taking their grievance to the Colorado Human Rights or Civil Rights Commission, which decided that there had been a violation of the state constitution. Now, when this happens, this is, by the way, what triggers the case. It triggers a constitutional issue for review with the Supreme Court, with the U.S. Supreme Court, because state law has to work within the framework of U.S. law, right? It's the U.S. government is the sovereign, and then states come underneath it. So when our Baker friend here, who got, slammed with a giant fine and practically put out of business, when he goes and files a lawsuit, he goes through the federal courts and it goes all the way up and is now at the Supreme Court. The issue here is exactly the opposite of what is being said in the New York Times. Today, the New York Times has a headline about this case. Justices sharply divided in gay rights case. And that's the headline. And I immediately was humored by this. And said, I've got to, I really have to share this with the listeners today, because if you're reading this in the New York Times, you're like, this is a gay rights case. And if you know me and know the program, I am all for gay rights. Do whatever you want to do. Live and let live. I am a libertarian when it comes to you doing your thing, me doing my thing. I love it. But this is not a gay rights case at all. It's a blatantly false misrepresentation of what the issue is. This is a freedom of speech case. And generally speaking, when we think about freedom of speech, what are we thinking about? What are we thinking about? We're thinking about protected speech, right? Me expressing an opinion and the government saying, you can't do it. You can't express that opinion. That is what we think about when we think about free speech. You're going to learn something here today. This is exciting. There's another type of free speech case, and there's precedent for this. Big fancy word saying the Supreme Court has waded into this issue and has expressed an opinion that is favorable to our cake shop owner friend again and again and again. Because it's not about protected speech. It's not about expressing an opinion of the government saying you can't express it. It's about compelled speech. And compelled speech is the contrapositive of protected speech. It just means speech that the government is making you say or speak. Because what that is here, how this relates to the case here, is the baker is, it's not about him not serving the customer. It's the government coming in and saying, you must put a pro-gay message on a cake, even though it's against your beliefs. And the reason, it's absurd. Of course it's absurd. And you don't want, I'll tell you right now, you don't want to live in a country that would force that to happen. And I don't think, I really strongly think you won't have to, because the justices are going to the shock of the liberal establishment are going to come out for the baker is my deeply held belief here. But there's a couple of cases. One, I remember one case. It was called Woolley? It's called Woolley versus Maynard, I believe is the case. It's all the way back in the 70s, and it had to do with New Hampshire. New Hampshire had a live free or die slogan on the license plate. That's what it was. There was a license plate and it said live free or die. And the guy, some guy sued the state saying, I don't agree with that slogan. And the state forcing me to put that on my license plate is not good. I don't want to do that. I don't think I should be compelled to say that slogan because I don't want to die. I'm okay living in shackles. I don't know what his problem was, but And that statement is just innocuous. It's on a license plate. I don't think we even read what's on the license plate. I mean, it's California, and you don't even remember probably what your license plate numbers are, let alone what's written on the plate. So the Supreme Court in this particular case decided, yeah, the state can't compel that. Can't force them to put it on there. It's crazy. Something so innocuous compared to this case. So I'll give you, I always like to turn the facts around. If you're a liberal and you're, no, Sam, you're absolutely disagree with you. This is a gay rights issue. You know, this is really what this guy is making an excuse because he wants to discriminate against the gays. Okay. All right. Now let me throw an example at you and see what you think about this. My name is Mohammed. People call me Mo. I am a practicing Muslim. I also happen to have a halal bake shop. I make wedding cakes. Well, some guy, you know, who's affiliated loosely with the, you know, fringe neo-Nazi movement walks in and says, I actually want you to draw me a picture of the Prophet Muhammad with a turban that has a bomb on it, because I'm having a giant slam Islam meeting and I really would like to pass out a funny cake. Now you see what I'm saying? The difference, there is one small difference, and that would never happen, right? That's never happened. The argument for this, and the logic of it's kind of interesting. The argument why this would be different from the bake shop case that's happening here with Masterpiece Cake Shop is that sexual orientation is a protected class. And that's one argument. But it's the same idea of compelling speech. It is absurd that the government would ever compel a practicing Muslim to put a defamatory image or statement relating to their religion on a cake. It's absurd. It would never happen. And incidentally, the same lobby that is pushing for this case would be absolutely dead set against it happening in that case. But this is what the most important thing about the Constitution is. Whenever you come out with an ideology-driven decision or an ideology-driven opinion of what the Constitution means, you risk of it later being turned against you and against your cause. If you're a liberal, you don't want to be compelled to say things by the government any more than if you're a conservative. It's absolutely the same thing. You do not want the government telling you what not to say, and you certainly don't want to have the government tell you what to say. And so it doesn't matter if it's compelled speech, if it's permitted speech, right? It's about you having the freedom of expression or of an absence of expression. And that's what this case is about. You know what? One interesting side note on this, I'll tell many of you conservatives out there who love Justice Rehnquist, who was a longtime Supreme Court justice and then at one point in time also the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Many of Rehnquist's decisions are absolute crap. I've said this so many times. And by the way, on that free speech case, on the Live Free or Die case, he came out against it. He wrote the dissenting opinion in that case. So I want to, but I'm going to give you some, let me give some other examples of this, help you understand. But I know this was people have been talking about this case for a long time. It's been going on for 5 years. And it really goes to the heart of who we are as a country. It really does. And it has nothing and absolutely zip to do with gay rights. Zip. All right. More on this when we come back. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, in talking about the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, this is the baker who refused to decorate a wedding cake for a gay couple because he claimed it went against his deeply held personal Christian religious beliefs. This case is being mischaracterized in the media. I explained why it's a freedom of speech case. That freedom of speech is not just about what the government permits you to say, but also about compelled speech. The government cannot compel you to speak if it goes against your personally held beliefs. I'm going to be fair here. I want equal treatment. I'll give equal treatment. I'll give an example of why this is a truly independent show. I mentioned that the New York Times ran a piece today, Justice is Sharply Divided in Gay Rights Case. It's not a gay rights case. It's a freedom of speech case. Okay. Well, I came upon a... Where do I have it? Here we go. I found it. Ben Shapiro did a piece. Who's the conservative guy, really super smart guy, attorney as well. But he calls it a religious liberty case. It's closer, okay? It is closer, certainly, than the New York Times. But also, in my view, and lawyers, we always disagree on things, right? This is why lawyers argue, because we're always in disagreement. But in my view, it's not a religious liberty case. I know that sells to his audience, but it's not a religious liberty case. It's a freedom of expression case. It's a freedom of speech case. So it's interesting how there are so many hot button issues in this that nobody's getting to what this is really all about. And so it'll be interesting because when the decision comes down, you know, I think one side is going to really want some declaration about gay rights. And another side is going to want some declaration about, you know, religious liberty. But they're really not going to get it. Do you remember Kim Davis? Was that her name? The clerk over in Kentucky that refused to hand out marriage licenses. It's interesting. Because... It's a little bit different in the sense that she's an elected official and she has to follow whatever the law is in the state. But what was her point? She goes, I'm not going to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples because it goes against my personal religious beliefs. Excuse me. And that didn't work out so well for her, right? Why? Because they want an act of her in her capacity signing for the state, and that's it. They're not asking her to do a little dance and say, I love gay marriage and yay, this is what I do. Like, they're not asking her to declare, to make a statement, to do a creative expression. She's just stamping the damn form. But here, the guy is an artist. I don't know if you've seen a really nice wedding cake. Some of them are phenomenal. And presumably this guy is good at what he does. So it's a creative expression. And if you just reverse the facts and you put if it was a Christian guy going to a Muslim guy asking the Muslim guy to put, either a depiction of the Prophet Muhammad, which is a no-no. In Islam, you can't do that. You're not supposed to do a depiction of the prophet. Or alternatively, let's say you walk in. Speaking of religious liberty, you go in and you say, "Hey, I would like for you to put a verse on the cake, on my cake. I'm doing a little party. It's for a little get together, and the cake. I want the scripture from the Quran that says death to Jews and death to gays." Stuff like that is in the Quran. So put it, I just want that. You think that the government would compel or that the Human Rights Commission in Colorado would say, yep, that's right. Muslim baker's got to do that. He's got to put it on the cake. No, they would. I guarantee you they would be making the religious liberty case. No. You can't. This guy's got a religious liberty that goes against his religion. You can't force this poor Muslim baker to do this. This is unacceptable. And this is exactly the problem with this. When it comes to the law, it has to be one law. It can't favor your issue versus my issue, or it's just comes down to what the Constitution permits. And there's precedent for this. So in my view, this case is going to end up favoring the cake shop owner. Okay, lots going on in Washington, especially with Al Franken. I'll tell you why this is happening. Interesting stuff. A few other things. Is the GOP a dead party? So thinks Sean Hannity. I'll tell you about that. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. John Wolf up next with the news.
News. Talk. Evolve.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC 836. Welcome to the program. Okay. Oh, the phone number. Yes, of course. We're here in the studio if you would like to chime in on any of this. 800-222-5222. Sam at samnation.com is the email. Trump today fired a tweet off, let's see, about 2 hours ago, it says, in response to Chuck Schumer calling on Al Franken to resign. This is the big news today. A bunch of senators got together and declared their opposition to Franken staying on in the Senate. Now, this is what Trump said. Nothing like trying to claim the moral high ground weeks after you should have and when it's clear that it's over, no one is buying it. So that's the classic Trump zinger, right? It's just the point is the Democrats have been banging their pots and pans over Moore and other Republicans perhaps tangled in impropriety while they themselves cover for their own. We've covered this extensively last 2 weeks. Conyers, John Conyers, the long-term, longest-serving member of the House of Representatives, resigned the other day. And now Franken is making an announcement tomorrow. He's denying that he's quitting. But apparently his staff, I heard that his staff is already sending out their resumes. So that's a bad sign. You know, when the captain, when the captain and the crew are getting the lifeboats out, you know that the ship's days are numbered. So at any rate, looming behind all of this is the Moore race in Alabama. The election is, I believe, on Tuesday, right? The election's on Tuesday. So what the Democrats want, they want, I guarantee it, they want to have, if I think they're presupposing that Moore is going to get elected in Alabama. And this is the guy who has had a number of accusers come forward that years ago, right, 3 years ago, he trolled the local mall looking for 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old girls when he was in his early 30s. So I think that they are, even though the polls have it close, I think the Democrats are starting to realize that this guy might just get elected and are trying to set the stage for opposing him. They are going to want to paint the Republican Party with a broad brush of this guy is, you know, make this guy the albatross of the Republican Party. And they've got a clear house, right? It's very inconvenient for them to have had Conyers hanging around and Franken hanging around and other of these guys that are doing pervy things far more recently, right? Not in Franken's case, but Conyers, while he was in Congress as an elected official and then using tax dollars to silence his accusers. Okay. It's a little bit more complicated than just, oh, we're going to use Roy Moore as the Republican Party albatross, because the Republican Party is not a monolithic single group right now. The Republican Party is very fractured, and I think maybe you've heard Doug McIntyre talking about this earlier today, where he was mentioning that, you know, the Republican Party might just be coming apart at the seams. Well, kind of not. There's a tension within the party. There's an old guard and a new guard. There's an establishment wing of the party. And then there are the Trumpists, the perhaps more the anti-establishment crowd. They're not all of them Trumpists, but the anti-establishment crowd. And this tension within the party may cause a split or a schism. Absolutely. But actually, I predict that it won't necessarily. But because the process of creating change within the Republican Party and having it evolve is going to take more time than just the 2018 race, right? The thing that everybody cares about right now are the midterms that are coming up next year. Nancy Pelosi's entire life right now is winning Congress. Maybe it will happen, maybe not. But the Republican Party still is not just a Trump party or a Roy Moore party. There are other people there, Jeff Flake and others. And this is very interesting. I got to expand on this when we come back. I got to take a time out. But you can't attack the whole party based on one faction of it. It's not going to work. It's very interesting stuff. Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KVC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Berjofsky here for my friend, my attorney, Sweet James Bergner. Look, the roads out there, they're not pretty. Half the time, people are putting on lipstick, they're shaving, texting, playing crossword puzzles, screaming at their kids. Whatever it is that people are doing, not driving their cars. If you've been in a wreck, if you've gotten hit by some goofball, don't deal with their insurance company. Don't try to go at it alone. Call the attorney that we trust here on this program, Sweet James Bergner. James and his team, they're great to deal with. Top-notch law firm. Friendly, professional, aggressive. They will fight for you, protect you, and make sure that you get the justice that you deserve. Make one easy phone call, 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021. Talk to somebody, get some good advice, get some direction, no recovery, no fee. The consultation is free. It's easy, 800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. You know, I have a great example of how this is not your grandfather's Republican Party. Sam Berjofsky here, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. I was deeply humored by this headline from the Miami Herald. Now, I threw Florida under the bus earlier in the program when I said I didn't want to live in a state that has 19-foot pythons on the loose. I forgot to mention they also have alligators, which is equally disturbing inhabitants, right, that you don't want to run into late at night. But this from the Miami Herald. As dreamers protested outside Marco Rubio's office, a U.S. Border Patrol truck showed up. So good. Well, you know what happened, right? They've been doing this. People show up protesting, demanding what? That they, as felons, be accommodated by the government. And for years, by the way, this BS was allowed. Now, if you've overstayed a visa and you're in a country illegally, anywhere else in the world that isn't a banana republic, okay? If you're anywhere, you show up in front of the government building protesting, hey, I should be able to stay here. Hey, I deserve rights. Hey, I'm a human being too. Of course they're going to bring the paddy wagon. Of course the popo is going to show up. And apparently here they didn't even round him up. The car just cruised by. So it's not even necessarily clear if this was a deliberate effort to intimidate, as this collective of young erstwhile dreamers are claiming. Yes, the executive branch under Trump is flexing muscle that executive branches have not flexed in the past for fear. The ones the administration in the past have not done it for fear of being called racist. Well, Trump's been called so many things. He doesn't care what you call him anymore. And as long as he keeps his spine on, this is good. And this is what I'm talking about as far as the remaking of the Republican Party. For years and years, the Republican Party has become this mushy mishmash of sort of Democrats. You know, it's a real difference between a Lindsey Graham and a Dick Durbin. These are two different senators. One is Republican and the other one is a Democrat. I mean, they're both old. They're both entitled. They both look down on us, by the way, because they are the anointed ones at the top of Mount Olympus. And we peons, you know, that pay taxes and work really hard and fund their, you know, BS lifestyle. We're the peon. I promise you, they are closer to each other these two senators from different parties, both in their outlook on life and also some of their political beliefs, closer to each other than Lindsey Graham and, let's say, Donald Trump or other, let's say, Tea Party members in the Republican Party. And so in this sense, yeah, the thing that the Democrats fear the most, I promise you this, the thing that they fear the most is that the Republican Party will go more toward the direction of Donald Trump, become an attractive standout party that brings in new voters, attracts disenchanted Democrats. And that is why they want to label that part of the Republican Party as the Roy Moore wing of the Republican Party and trash it. And that's why they're circling up, you know, they're drawing out their knives and are getting ready for a big fight. Part of that, they got to clean house first and get Franken out the door. So expect a big announcement tomorrow, probably a resignation. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. Talk Radio 790. KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Wow, where did the 2 hours go? This flew by a little too quickly once again. Now, we're off tomorrow night. We're not here tomorrow night. The Kings are on. So no Sam Nation tomorrow, but we'll be back on Friday. And I actually want to get into... If I have time, if the world hasn't gone to hell, I'm going to talk about LeVar Ball, this father that this helicopter parent of helicopter parents, LiAngelo Ball's dad. He's the basketball player over at UCLA who got caught shoplifting in China. There's so many interesting things here. I want to get into it. So if I have time permitting, I will get into that on Friday. Now, I think the big picture here is you look at the issues that, you know, we've covered here. You got the Jerusalem move, a bold new step, action being taken to help initiate a position of strength in the Middle East peace process. On the other hand, you've got certainly a very contentious political climate. Sides on left and right are at each other's throats. And then you've got the Supreme Court case moving through the system, where, again, the issues in it are being characterized, I think, in a wrong way. It's down to just freedom of speech. And I two things that I take away from all of this here as I look forward to what will happen in the coming weeks, months, and years. Trump is a far more rational actor than you, I think, than a lot of people give him credit for. He's surrounded by good people, and I think he's a decision maker who when it comes to Middle East peace, I actually think that of all the presidents in the past, and you may think I'm crazy, but all the presidents in the past, I think he has a chance of getting this thing done. And it's because he's got credibility with Israel, and he's already coming right out of the gate signaling strength to the Palestinians. The Palestinians, they're a group, I mean, you know who the Palestinian Liberation Organization is they're terrorists. You know, people talk about the PLO. I saw this reporter today on CNN interviewing a council member for the PLO. I was like, there's like some credible organization that, you know, does, you know, charity and humanitarian work on the side and, you know, is just out there for the liberty of its good people. Nonsense. This is Yasser Arafat's, you know, killing machine that now has put on suits and ties and is pretending to have a veneer of respectability. So you've got that. But you know, the other thing is with this number of Supreme Court cases moving through the system, including Trump's travel ban, which you may have heard, has been reinstated pending a decision in its entirety. So the Supreme Court looked at what happened in Hawaii and what happened in Oregon and Washington. And they're like, no, we're letting this thing fly. We're going to make a decision later. That's a really good sign. You know, we are a country that at the end of the day, despite all of the dysfunction, despite all the fear mongering, we are a country that works. We are a Supreme Court. We have a Supreme Court and a system that gets things right a lot of the time, more time than when we get than getting it wrong. And for all your fear about the Trumpster, I'm telling you, this may end up to be a presidency to remember, and in a good way. All right. I'll be back on Friday. Can't wait. Have a wonderful Thursday. Stay safe out there. Stay away from the fires. Keep your loved ones safe. And I will see you on Friday. Looking forward to it.
News, talk, evolve. 790 KABC.